Hey, this is Ryan Thomas. Thanks so much for listening to On the Road and supporting Faith Radio. You are just the very best, and we appreciate you so much. Enjoy the show.
Discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Well, in our brave new world, with social media leading the way, we crave attention, acceptance, and a life as great as the one we see on our friend's Facebook profile. And it's become doable, even easy, to craft a fantasy world online where everything is just fine. But back in reality, so many are overwhelmed with feelings of loneliness, depression, and anxiety. In the new book, Optimisfits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness, Ben Corson shares unbridled optimism and enthusiasm that might be startling at first, but is powerful enough for life's darkest moments. We explore that powerful vision today on the road. Welcome aboard, good man. How are things today?
Oh, living the dream. I'm so excited to be here. And I'm actually pretty impressed with the fact that you actually said Optimisfits right, because a lot of times people don't. They don't know how to say it. So you have good phonetic abilities.
Oh, that means the world to me. Now I'm curious, how have they mispronounced it in the past?
I mean, like, you know what? I don't even remember, because during the of this book, I've said the word so many times and said Optimisfits over and over again. I can hardly say the word optimistic unless I'm like super focused. So like, I can't even remember.
I understand. Well, that's where to start. I mean, it is a phrase that really does grab your attention, and you wonder what is going on with the phrase. So what is an Optimisfit, and why do you dub yourself one, sir?
Yeah, an Optimisfit is an optimistic misfit who is a nonconformist adventurer, lives with wild abandon, childlike wonder, and unapologetic, reckless optimism. So ultimately, the reason I call myself an Optimisfit is because we live in a culture that is lulling us into complacency and conformity, where we're basically essentially and effectively told, you know, like, if you want to live the successful American dream, you have to work 40 hours a week for 40 years to retire on 40% of your income, get your 401k, 2.5 kids, dog named Spot, white picket fence, timeshare in Palm Springs, tool around in your golf cart, then claim your spot in the cemetery. And that's basically the American dream in a nutshell. And for a lot of like Gen Z and Gen Y, millennials, post-millennials, centennials, a lot of us are just like, that doesn't sound interesting to us. Like, we would rather live a life that's adventurous to us, like something God's called us to do. So ultimately, what's happened is our generation is now the most depressed on record. And so we want to rebel against that. We want to be like the hopeful misfits in a generation of depression and conformity.
It's such an interesting topic, because, I mean, we have more opportunity, more security than ever before, right, in 2019. But you're right.
Right.
I mean, it's not simply that we're considered the most depressed generation of all time. We look around and we see it in our own lives, in the lives of our friends and loved ones. You explore the why at length in the book, but maybe just even a further sketch of why you think that is first.
Yeah, well, ultimately, I was just listening to this on a podcast the other day, but if you take medieval kings and you compared them with people who like even lived in trailers today, the creature comforts that even the low income American has today is actually greater than kings used to live.
Wow.
So if you put it all together, like considering all things, we do without a doubt live better than kings used to live. And so the big question, and I get asked this a lot, is like, why are we the most depressed generation ever? And fortunately, I don't have to just speculate about why I think it is. Sociological research and data shows us one of the chief reasons is actually social media. So I was reading about this today, but basically, you know, one of the ways, I was reading this in a science book today, but one of the ways we like improve our health is by cutting salt, eating vegetables, and trying to stay away from social networking sites. And don't get me wrong, like, I have social media. I mean, social media is not a bad thing. It's like, you know, if you take a microphone, It doesn't invent the vocal cord. It just makes it louder. Or if you take a car, it doesn't invent motion. It just makes it faster. So to social media, it doesn't invent connection. It just makes the world more connected and it intensifies it. But if you turn up the volume on it too loud, it can create feedback loops. So like if you turn up a microphone too loud, it actually makes it harder to hear the human voice, even though it was meant to make it louder. Or if you turn up the volume on cars too much, if you have too many cars, you get a traffic jam in LA at 5 p.m. Or if you like, if you turn up social media too loud and you make it too much of a premium, the very thing that was meant to connect us causes us to compare ourselves with one another. And that's the thief of joy. Compare our behind the scenes with other people's highlight reels. That's one of the reasons our generation is so depressed, according to the research.
Man, that's so good. But the really cool thing that you do, of course, is you don't just leave it there. The hope-filled application that you take from this reality is that you see a real opportunity here for followers of Jesus in the midst of this.
Absolutely. And that's really the crux and locus point from which everything else springs in the book is I went through 10 years of chronic depression myself. And what happened is there was just a group of friends who really pulled me out of my existential navel gazing and brought me into adventures with God and adventures with the squad. One of the main characters in the book, one of the main Optimisfit characters, his name's Cameron. He pointed out to me that Jesus said, where two or more are gathered, there am I in the midst. And, you know, a lot of people subliminally wonder, I thought Jesus was in my midst, even if I'm by myself. Like, didn't he say, lo, I'm with you always, even to the ending of the age, or I'll never leave you nor forsake you. And so why does he say where two or more are gathered? And it's because Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And who is the Father? Well, 1 John 4 says God is love. So love needs two or more to exchange, you know, between people. You can't have love with the unholy Trinity, me, myself, and I. Like, you need somebody else to give love to. So that's why he says, I'm in the midst, because where love is, there God is. God is love, and Jesus is in the image of his Father. So so that was the main thing that brought me out of depression was a bunch of crazy friends who showed me, if you want to go fast, you should go alone. But if you want to go far, you should go together, because it's not about isolation. It's about infiltration.
Goodness.
And a lot of people think they want to disappear when what they really want is just to be found. And so one more thing about that, like, it was what rescued me from depression was not necessarily just like deep talks. It was crazy friends who showed me that life can be joyful, childlike, adventurous again. Like, we can read Soren Kierkegaard, but we can also, you know, ride on our skateboards. And like, that was the big thing that brought me out.
Wow. So much wisdom in just a short time right there from Ben Corson. He authors the new book, Optimisfits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness. It is fascinating. I mean, just to listen to the joy that just is so obviously present in who you are, that comes from your voice. And then, of course, to read about the really profound personal losses that you've had in your life that you're still going through today and waging that battle with depression. Are people surprised when they take those two things together?
Yeah, I think so. And I've always wondered why that is, but If you like look at the Enneagram, a person who's a 7 on the Enneagram is also predisposed to depression, and a 7 means like fun and sun. So like if you look at Robin Williams, he was known for his joy and his happiness, and he committed suicide. And so the fact is, 7s can have very high highs, but also very low troughs. And so like for me, it's either I'm Tigger on steroids or I just hit a wall. And so So God has given me victory over depression. And, you know, like so many of your listeners, I've gone through really bad stuff, you know, from my brother passing away a month ago and my sister dying in a car accident and just a lot of heartbreak and stuff that's, you know, that's tragic happens to us. But we have to make the choice and say, we are not going to let our hope be dictated by our circumstances. Rather, our circumstances will be dictated by our hope. So we refuse to be creatures of our circumstances. We're going to be creators of our circumstances. We're not going to let the world happen to us. We choose to happen to the world. And that's what it means to be an optimist, is when you can remain wildly, absurdly optimistic in the face of all the tragedies that and arrays of suffering that the world throws at you, then you take away your circumstances' power to control your happiness, your decision, and your sense of possibility. So, yeah, that's basically the heart of what it means to be an optimist fit.
Wow. It's extraordinary stuff. You really talked about the key to battling the season of depression that you went through, being that community, that amazing community, the amazing friendships and relationships that you've had. You also talk about diagnosing the self-obsession that we opened up talking about, and looking at our culture and seeing how self-obsessed we are in so many ways. And you really say that surrounding ourselves with a particular kind of person, a particular kind of community, is also the prescription for that. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, because you're the average of the, you know, the famous quote, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Because you become like who you are. And the book of Proverbs in the Bible says that he who walks with the wise will become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. So basically, our characteristics are contagious. And so we want to get around the people who are going to spread the right ones.
Well, speaking of individuals such as this, you talk about some optimist fit heroes of yours. Who are these optimist fits, and how have their stories spoken into your life, sir?
Yeah, so the patron saint of optimist fits is Peter Pan. Like, we refuse to grow up. I love it when people are like, you're so immature, you skateboard, whatever. And I'm like, thank you so much, because Jesus said, you know, if you want to be great in my kingdom, become a child. So we're after Peter Pandemonium, the beautiful chaos of never growing up. So, you know, G.K. Chesterton said, the Ancient of Days is younger than we have sinned and grown old. So yeah, like Peter Pan, and a lot of people say, well, didn't Paul say I put away childish things? And yes, he did, but that was in the context of the love chapter. Like, he was talking about love. So being childish is when you have a mind mentality. We're not about that, but we are about being childlike. And, you know, Jesus set up such as the kingdom of heaven when he took up children in his arms. But yeah, so then there's four historical examples I use, among others, of my optimist fit heroes. G.K. Chesterton, who I mentioned a moment, he would often debate George Bernard Shaw. And like, he was so funny in a world of skepticism. He would talk to George Bernard Shaw, and he'd be like, you know, I see there's been a famine in the land, because he was so skinny. And Chesterton was so fat. And George Bernard Shaw would say, and I see the cause of the famine, because Chesterton was eating all the time. Or like, in a world that was so depressed, like in Victorian upper lip stoicism, he was a good example of somebody who, you know, this is what he said. Angels fly because they take themselves lightly. And he was able to have like this childlike joy. And then, of course, one of them is Billy Graham, who would preach to alligators when he was 18 years old, or, you know, that's one of my favorite stories about him, or George MacDonald, who got kicked out of his church by the board of elders because he was emphasizing the love of God too much, or the Beatles, who would like joke around during interviews when everyone was supposed to take them so seriously in that culture. So yeah, these are some of my optimist fit heroes.
Those are awesome. Thank you so much for that. By the way, do you happen to know the background on the preaching of Billy Graham to the alligators?
Yeah, it was at Bob Jones College,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes.
When he would, he was at Bob Jones College, and nobody would listen to him preach, or when he was prepping to preach, he would just talk to the local alligators.
I love that so much. Ben Corson is with us. He authors the new book, Optimist Fits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness. Just the title of the book makes you smile. And how many books are going to do that? I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff right there. You also tackle failure. Failure is one of those things that defines our life. I mean, we encounter it just about every single day. You argue that failure can be a benefit to us. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, ultimately, when you fail forward, every mistake you learn from is a step toward the victory. So like, Walt Disney was fired by a newspaper editor because he lacked imagination and had no good ideas. So here's some spoiler alerts, some more from the book. But like, this is crazy, because you look at Charlie Chaplin, whose first screen test was panned because they said, you know, his act is too obscure for anyone to understand. Or Thomas Edison, who was told by his school teachers he was too stupid to learn anything. Or Beethoven, who was told he was a hopeless composer. Or you look at Colonel Sanders, who his secret recipe of 11 herbs and spices was turned down by over 1,000 restaurants before he created KFC. And on these stories go. Vincent van Gogh sold one painting in his entire life. No wonder the guy chopped off his ear. Harrison Ford, after his first small movie role, was taken into an executive's office and told he'd never make it in the movie business. So you look at the Bible characters too, like David was a bad dad. His own son Amnon raped his sister Tamar, and Moses had temper problems, and Elijah was moody, and Job cursed the day he was born. And I mean, you look at Peter, who denied Jesus three times when a little girl peer pressured him. Basically, these characters were like, we're failures, but we might fail, and yet God's love never fails, and that's what counts. So it ain't about how high we climb. It's about how high we can bounce when we hit the bottom.
You also tackle one of the more famed sayings, I would say, in all of Christendom, that it is not a religion, it is a relationship. But what do you point to as being the difference between those two things?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of cliches, but that's one of them that's like so good. Even though it's so hackneyed and overused and such a truism and a trope, like, I just believe that so much. Here's the difference in a word between religion and relationship. Religion says, I messed up, don't tell dad. Relationship says, I messed up, I better call dad. So religion is what drives you away from God out of condemnation. And then you try to placate his wrath by sacrifice. Whereas relationship is about drawing close to an Abba Father. And ultimately, the thing is like religion is what killed Jesus. There were 6,000 Pharisees who were the assembled might of Jewish orthodoxy who colluded with the high priests, the scribes, the scholars, the Roman government, Pontius Pilate, to crucify him. Why? Because like he would harvest grain on the Sabbath, which was illegal in their law. He would heal seven times in four gospels on the Sabbath, non-life-threatening diseases, which was also illegal. He would say, you've heard it said, but I say to you, contradicting their teachings. So he was, in their minds, like somebody who was dangerous because he ate with tax collectors and sinners. And back then, eating was a political act of solidarity. Like the same bread molecules that go into you go into me when I share bread with you. So we're becoming one in that regard. And so Jesus is eating with tax collectors and sinners, and he gets in trouble by the religious orthodox. And so I think if Jesus found out, like, you know, they started a religion in my name, he'd be like, they did what? Like, his thing was not to set up a new religion. His thing was to teach us a relationship with Abba Father, to tear the temple veil, not to get us into the presence, but to get the presence into us.
Well, you know, it's a pretty interesting direction that you take in the book, which really goes along with that. You talk about strength and the fact that the harder that you work to change the world, the more naysayers, the more enemies you will gather, but you should love them stubbornly, you say. What's that about?
Yeah, like, I want to be every bit as stubborn as my enemies. So if my enemy says, I'm going to stubbornly hate you, then I'm going to say, sweet, I'm going to be just as stubborn right back. You can't make me stop loving you. Like, you can't make me stop loving you. In fact, there was some sociological data that came out that reported that 25% of the people you meet won't like you, no matter what. They won't like you. Like, whoa. You can buy them a car and they won't like you. And in fact, that's why if you ever say, like, man, no matter what I do, I can't please that person, that's because research says 25% of the people you meet just won't like you. The second 25% of people you meet, the second set of 25%, they don't like you, but they might be persuaded to like you. The third set of 25% of people you meet do like you, but might change their mind and not like you. And then the fourth set of 25% of people you meet will always like you no matter what. But that also includes moms, so they kind of have to like you, you know? So when I read that research a few years ago, it really freed me up, because if there were people who didn't like me, I'm like, listen, that's just part of the data. That's part of what it means to be a human. Most of our 20s, we're trying to figure out, why don't people like me? And then you realize, no, that's just par for the course. And people aren't my dictionary. They don't define me.
Wow. That's phenomenal stuff right there. From Mr. Ben Corson, who joins us today on the road. The new book is called Optimisfits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness. What a fun and insightful conversation this has been so far. You know, we're always looking for that prescription that is the momentary prescription to a lifelong issue, right? And you talk so much about fun and so much about childlike an attitude, you know, a whole spirit of childlikeness. You say that you are an official fun haver, though. You commit to that. And the way I read that was as being, you know, it's consistent. That's an attitude. That's a spirit that continues. It's not just a momentary decision.
Yeah. I think this lifestyle of fun ventures with God and squad is a volitional choice of lifestyle. So I like to say, you know, we optimists are professional fun havers who live for a living. People think fun is an elementary message you move on from rather than a deep message you move further into. The reality is fun is fundamental. And Jesus put the fun back in funeral. He causes the dead to raise, the lame to leap, the blind to see, the mute to speak, the lost to be found. So like for us, we think that it's not only going to be fun to change the world, but fun is the very thing that sets that change in motion. Because we live in a generation that's got so self-absorbed with social media, so depressed, that like it used to be girls had to live up to models they saw in magazines. Now they're just trying to live up to their own Instagram profile. Oh. So nowadays it's like we're so depressed, so sad that we need an influx of fun havers who are going to be like ridiculously optimistic in the face of a despairing generation.
Wow. Well, it has been just contagious joy today from Mr. Ben Corson. The book title, one more time, Optimisfits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness. And sir, by the way, I got to say, before we talk about where to find the book, you just ran a significant distance, right? Right before you started recording this interview. And I couldn't tell. That's pretty impressive by itself.
Well, that's funny because I just started feeling the physical fatigue like right at the end. So I'm like, I felt that 40-minute jog. So for those of your listeners who don't know the context, when you called me right before the show started, like I was literally on the last 100 meters of my run. And so you're like, who is this guy like panting, running down the street with cars honking in the background or whatever? So yeah, so I feel like I got my good workout for the day.
Sir, I'm sure available wherever fine books are sold, but if we want to begin the journey, where's the place to go online?
Yeah, so you can get it at Barnes & Noble or anywhere like that, as you said, bookstores everywhere. But online, you can get it at Amazon.com. You can get it at BenCorson.com. And also on my website, you can find like our YouTube channel and our TV show times and all that in social media to give people hope, not comparison, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, if you just go to BenCorson.com or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, you can get Optimisfits there.
Optimisfits, Igniting a Fierce Rebellion Against Hopelessness. What an inspiring message, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Really enjoyed it.
It was so good to meet you. I love your joy. You have so much fun in your voice, and I can't wait to hopefully do it again.
Some say don't give up and hope that your good is good enough. Head down, keep on working. If you can earn it, you deserve it. Some say push on through. After all, it's the least that you can do. But don't buy what they're selling. It couldn't be further from the truth. What if I were the one to tell you that the fight's already been won? Well, I think your day's about to get better. What if I were the one to tell you that the work's already been done? It's not good news, it's the best news ever. Some say don't ask for help. God helps the ones who help themselves. So press on, get it right. Otherwise, get left behind. Some say he's keeping score. So try hard, then try a little more. But hold up, if this were true, explain to me what the cross is for. What if I were the one to tell you that the fight's already been won? Well, I think your day's about to get better. What if I were the one to tell you that the work's already been done? It's not good news, it's the best news.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.
Thank you so much for listening. Programming like this is available through your support, and you can learn more about partnering financially at myfaithradio.com. We'd also love to hang out with you during the week on Facebook and on Twitter. Just search for On the Road with Ryan Thomas. Talk to you again soon.